Hello, all of you out there in Radioland. This is KPTZ Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. And for our virtual listeners, you're logged on to kptz.org. The website is more than just a way to listen to the radio today. For example, you can read the biographies of all our hosts and DJs. You can listen to podcasts with politicians. And of course, you can listen to today's show. Some of our earlier shows are also online as podcasts. In fact, much of the original programming on KPTZ is currently available online as podcasts. You know, double your listening pleasure. Listen to today's show as well as some of the earlier ones that you might have missed. I'm Marianne McNellis. This show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? Who are the PUD guys stringing up wire for new homes in North Beach? And speaking of new homes, who's in that gang of workers on the spaceship monster house on the top of the hill? And who's that young mother jogging along behind a supersized carriage with not one, but two babies in it? This show, Our Town, profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work in Jefferson County. We talk with the people who make up the eclectic mix around these parts. We talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca, right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, captains and chefs, the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, the otters, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. Listening to Our Town is a way to meet some of Port Townsend's authentic and even eclectic people, your neighbors, your friends, and particularly the people you don't know yet but you'd like to meet them. Today, my guest is a rather important man in our community, Mike Glenn, who's the CEO of Jefferson Healthcare. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you.
Let's start at the beginning. Are you a Port Townsend native?
No, I'm actually from Olympia, a Northwest native.
Northwest native, I see. And did you go to high school there?
Yes, went to high school at Capitol High, the new school that they built on the west side.
Okay. I always like to ask people a little bit about their high school experience because high school kids have a way of lumping everyone into a group. And your peers, if they were going to lump you into a group, what would they have said about you at that time?
Well, I suspect I would have been lumped into the jock group. I played football, basketball, and baseball.
Wow.
So I think...
That kept you pretty busy.
Yes, it did.
Well, did you find time to attend any classes?
Yes. Yes. I managed to graduate.
You managed
somehow.
To graduate.
Yes.
And with a decent enough GPA, I guess.
Yes. Decent enough. That's how my parents probably would have described it.
I see. Were you one of these people who knew from a very young age what you wanted to be when you grew up?
No, not at all. I had lots of influences, but there wasn't really a particular profession that was my passion at the time.
I see. Had you decided that you wanted to follow a college path, or were you open to other things?
I knew that I wanted to go to college, and even then, my thinking was probably going on to a graduate school. I was influenced by a cohort of students that I admired, and that's what they felt they needed to do.
So I thought that might work for you, too.
Yes.
So where did you apply?
I made application at Pacific Lutheran and Lewis and Clark and a few other schools, but chose Linfield, a small liberal arts school in McMinnville, Oregon.
And they obviously had a pretty good football team at the time.
Yeah, and it was a great town, and I thought it would be a good fit.
Now, how does that work? I mean, were you one of these people that were fortunate enough to get an athletic scholarship to go there?
I was able to get some grant dollars, yes.
Good.
It's an NAIA school. At the time, they didn't offer scholarships, but they were able to put together some help for me, which was crucial.
Yeah, that's excellent.
Mm-hmm.
So did you make the team right away? Were you right there?
Yeah. I played for 2 years.
And what position?
A cornerback.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about 30 pounds ago. But it was a great experience and great folks, and I enjoyed it. I certainly didn't end up in the NFL, but that influence placed me right where I needed to be.
You said you played for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Is there any reason you only played for two versus four?
Yeah, I banged up my knee.
Oh, oops.
Yes, and felt that maybe I wanted to pursue some other things. Because even back then, to be a college athlete, it kind of had to be your first, second, and third priority.
Yeah.
And it was clear to me that this wasn't as big of a deal to me as to maybe some others. So I thought I would maybe pursue some other interests.
I think you're right about that. A lot of college athletes, that's all they have time to do is be an athlete. I guess if you're going to get in the NFL, that's one thing, but otherwise,
right.
You might need that education.
Well, sure. And you just miss out on so many other interesting things that go on in college.
So what did you end up majoring in?
Political science.
Okay. And where did you think that would lead you?
I thought maybe law school. I thought that would be a good basis for a law education.
And did you apply to law school?
No.
So what did you do right after graduating?
Well, after graduating, I was interested in a break. I went to work for the William Derricks Company in Seattle selling IBM typewriters and did that for about 2 years.
Uh-huh. And at the end of 2 years, you decided that was enough?
The plan was to go back to school.
Okay.
And so I was, during those 2 years, I was reviewing options and trying to decide what would be the best path for me.
Right.
And looked at several MBA programs and then learned of master's in hospital administration programs and had a buddy I went to undergrad with that started a program at Xavier in Cincinnati and thought it was great. A great program, great education, and more narrowed job prospects than coming out with just an MBA.
So he already had started there.
Correct.
And he told you about it.
Yeah, he was just finishing up his first year, so right when I was getting serious about making applications, and he said, hey, you need to check Xavier out. I think it would be a good fit for you. And my thought was, at worst, I would travel to a part of the country that I'd never seen before, meet some new people, and have an interesting experience. And it turned out to be much better than that.
So what kind of courses do you take to get this degree?
There was close alignment with Xavier's MBA program. Probably half of the courses of the MHA program were in the MBA program. So for instance, Jefferson Healthcare, we employ 600 plus people. So it's important to have some base understanding of human resources and how that works.
I think you'd have to.
Yeah. Our budget's now up to $100 million. So it's important to have some base understanding of corporate finance and accounting and such, marketing courses, and so lots of courses in the MBA program. Then the MHA program were more hospital specific, legal issues in healthcare, public health courses, some understanding of clinical care, but it was mostly from an administrative perspective.
Okay, and this is a 2-year program?
It's 2 years didactic and then an 8-month residency.
And where'd you do your residency?
I did my residency in Los Angeles at a big hospital right by LAX, Sentinella Hospital Medical Center in Inglewood.
Oh, that must have been a change.
Yeah, it was kind of my first orientation into a hospital, so It might be more accurate to say moving to a smaller hospital was a bigger change.
But you were a young guy in Los Angeles. Did you have time to enjoy the beach?
I did. Yeah, for those listeners who are familiar with Los Angeles, I actually lived in Redondo Beach, which was about a 35-minute drive up the PCH to Sentinella. But back then, it was a fun little beach town that was a great place to spend a year.
When you were about to finish, did you consider staying on in Los Angeles, or did you have a definite idea where you wanted to be?
I had spent most of my life in the Northwest, and while there were aspects of Los Angeles that I liked, there's a lot to be said for 72 degrees in the middle of January, but my sense was that I'd always end up back in the Northwest. There's something about this place that it's hard to leave and harder to stay away. I came back thinking that ultimately I would end up working in a hospital in the state.
Did you apply to hospitals in the state then, or what happened next?
I started to reach out to hospitals in the state and learned that it would be much easier to get a job in a hospital in Washington State with some experience.
The old catch-22.
Yes.
You need experience to get a job.
Exactly. And particularly in Washington State, it's kind of a different healthcare market than maybe some other states. So I concluded that this is where I wanted to end up, but the path to get here might result in me taking healthcare administration jobs wherever. That led to a year in a hospital in Charlotte, about a year and a half at the hospital in Houston, and then about another 2 years in a hospital in California before I finally convinced the administrator at the hospital in Port Angeles to hire me.
Okay, you're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 on the radio dial. If you're online, it's kptz.org. The show is called Our Town. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. Today my guest is Mike Glenn, who is the CEO of Jefferson Healthcare, which employs over 600 people. I believe it's the largest private employer in Jefferson County.
Yeah, well, we're a public organization, but we're the largest employer in the county.
Largest employer,
yeah.
Okay. Well, Mike was just telling me his path to get back to the Northwest. He studied, he got his degree, he hit a couple of hospitals on the way here. I believe you said you were in Houston, mm-hmm. in Los Angeles, and what was the third one?
Charlotte,
okay. And then you, I guess, had been applying to different places in the Pacific Northwest. And did you get the one you really wanted fresh out, or did you have to go to different places?
My parents had relocated from Olympia to Port Angeles. Mm. So whenever I would come back and visit them, I would go down to the hospital there, Olympic Memorial Hospital, and pester the CEO, a fellow named Al Remington, who actually was a colleague of Vic Dirksen's. And I would grab coffee with him and just basically
say, here I am.
Yeah, he needs to hire me at some point. And he'd say, well, I don't have a job for you now. And I said, well, here's how you can contact me. And I'm not going to stop this until you extend an offer. So I'm out there. And I got to know the CFO at the hospital and thought that it would be a great place for me. And what I've learned in this state is that it truly is a tight network, where when we have a position to fill in administration, it's frequently you know somebody who knows somebody who knows the person that's making application.
Interesting.
Which I think is a great way to understand if the person's not only technical skills, but values and approach to work is it would be a good fit.
Do you know roughly how many hospitals there are in the state of Washington?
Yeah, just short of 100. Okay. 94, 95 hospitals, all told. Yeah.
Okay, so you finally wore him down.
Mm-hmm.
And what was your first position there?
I was an assistant administrator of support services.
Translate that for us.
The CEO is the administrator,
right?
And then there's usually three or four assistants to the CEOs that are responsible for different departments in the hospital. For instance, a chief nursing officer or assistant administrator of nursing would be responsible for all the nursing departments. The assistant administrator of finance would be responsible for the finance departments. The assistant administrator over support services is responsible for housekeeping and dietary and laundry and radiology and laboratory and those set of services, frequently referred to as ancillary services.
Okay. And how long were you in that position?
Well, I did that for 3 or 4 years and then took on surgery and some other departments and kind of an associate administrator role. And then I think in like 1999, the CEO at the time left and I was appointed CEO end of 99.
Okay. And how big was the hospital at that point in time?
Olympic typically is just short of twice the size of Jefferson. So interestingly, the budget back in the early 2000s was similar to what the budget is of Jefferson now. But it had an average daily census of maybe 45 patients, had a growing employed physician network, had a campus in Sequim that we were building up. Outpatient diagnostic imaging services. So I think a good rule is about twice the size of Jefferson Healthcare.
And how long were you CEO of Olympic?
I think it was like 8 years. I was here for 15 years and about half the time as an assistant and half the time as the CEO.
And then what happened in your career?
As I mentioned, my residency was at a large tertiary hospital in Los Angeles. I didn't necessarily graduate with a degree in hospital administration to be a small rural hospital administrator. I wanted to get back to Washington and Port Townsend was a great fit, and it worked out for my girlfriend and fiance at the time, who's now my wife, was able to find a job at the Port Angeles Attorney General's office. So it's kind of one of those things where it was a
good fit.
A terrific move on several fronts. But my thought was, if I wasn't certain I wanted to be a small rural hospital administrator my whole career, but if I do it much longer than 15 years, I would kind of be branded as a small hospital administrator. Mm-hmm. Plus, our daughter was just finishing kindergarten and be going to first grade the next year, and we thought this would be a good time to possibly move her. So I took a job as a chief operating officer at the Providence St. Peter Hospital in Olympia, and we moved down there.
And how is that a significantly bigger hospital?
Yes, it's a 400 beds.
That's bigger.
Yeah, similar to the size of the hospital in California that I worked at.
And how long were you there?
I was there for about a year and a half. That I think several things. I mean, you never know till you try, right? And I think what we concluded that maybe we like living on the peninsula more than Olympia, and also I was partial not only to small rural hospitals necessarily, but I was partial to and thought I was a better fit to be in the CEO role. So we sort of concluded it would be best to get on a path back to that type of job.
And how did you do that?
Well, it took one more stop. We moved right back to Sequim, and so I was doing this nightmarish commute, and I was it's difficult to have a 2+ hour commute in a COO role, which requires lots of early morning meetings and lots of late at night dinner meetings.
Yeah.
So I was able to go to work for Valley Medical Center in Renton as a vice president of business development and service line management. And the CEO that I was working for, I had known for quite some time, and he was more interested in just, you know, I'm just do your job and grow these particular services and develop new programs. And I don't really care how you manage your hours. So I had a little bit more flexibility,
right,
to make that commute work until a better fit job became available.
And when did it?
It was about 2.5 years when I learned that Vic had submitted his resignation, retirement really, after 30-some plus years, and thought, well, it's a small rural hospital and it's on the peninsula and I know some of the folks there and on the board and they're terrific, and this might be the next perfect place for me.
And so when did you start as CEO of
October
Jefferson?
October
2010.
6.5 years ago.
Okay. And Jefferson Healthcare is a huge part of this community. How has it changed and developed over the 6.5 years you've been in charge?
Well, it's grown. Our physician group has grown primarily because the need for both primary care and specialty care continues to rise, and we are looked upon to fill that need. I think the number of specialty services that we provide now, a couple of years ago we completed a strategic plan and we tried to understand the demographics of the community and the type of services that people within that demographic would need. And the Jefferson County is an aging in place community with,
right,
almost a third of the population 65 and older, and people in that age cohort tend to use more orthopedic services, more cardiology services, more oncology services, more women's health services, and more dermatology services. So we began to work on developing services or reinforcing services that we thought our community would need.
And that's an important point. I mean, we do have an aging population here in Jefferson County. And so Jefferson Healthcare, I guess you're saying that you were anticipating where this would lead the community in terms of what healthcare services were needed. And you just identified a couple: orthopedic, cardiology, oncology, women's health.
Dermatology.
Dermatology.
Yes.
Yeah, I can see all of those things being important. You know, healthcare is a hot topic right now, and I don't want to put you totally on the hot spot about this, but generally speaking, with Obamacare, how did that change the picture in terms the broad stroke of healthcare in this county?
Well, I think the Affordable Care Act really was intended to do two things, and it was very successful at one. And it would have been more successful in the next few years at the other. What it was successful at was allowing more people to gain access to health insurance through Medicaid expansion. And in Jefferson County, about 3,000 residents were able to get health insurance through expanded Medicaid rolls. So the criteria to for an adult to be eligible for Medicaid was changed, and therefore more people were eligible, and there were subsidies for folks to help them get on the Medicaid rolls. So Jefferson Healthcare was taking care of several of those patients anyway, but when they became eligible for Medicaid, there was a reimbursement stream now that came along with that. I think that the biggest advantage was we had 3,000 people in our community who were living with the anxiety of not having the security of health insurance, and probably making healthcare decisions based on that. You know, should I go see a primary care doctor for this if it's going to require some out-of-pocket payment? Although, you know, there are programs that financial assistance programs at the hospital, typically there is some degree of out-of-pocket payment. So when the Medicaid eligibility was increased, I think 3,000 people felt better about their healthcare security. So that's first and foremost. Secondly, it did with the decrease in charity care and the increase in Medicaid reimbursement, it did provide a level of financial security that allowed Jefferson Healthcare to begin providing more services that typically require a subsidy, services that our community needs that either the government payers or the private payers pay less than what the cost of providing those services is. So I think we were able to do some things that we may not have been able to do.
But, you know, in this country, hospitals, doctors, whatever, it's a business.
Yes.
It's for profit. And the bottom line is extremely important. What sort of pressure does that put on you?
Well, there certainly are proprietary for-profit hospitals that are part of corporations and have financial performance requirements to meet the expectations of the shareholders. And then there's public hospital district like ours,
right,
where the for-profit incentive, if you will, is if at the end of the year we are able to have a positive bottom line, that just means that we can continue to be an independent entity and continue to provide the level of services that we currently are providing. So you are absolutely right in that healthcare is a business.
Right.
That it's difficult to talk about at times because of what we do, and particularly as a public hospital district, you would think, well, you know, isn't this kind of a public health service? But the reality is of the $100 million operating budget that we have, and another way to look at that is that for all the services that Jefferson Healthcare provides, the expense of those services is $100 million, that we receive about $420,000 of tax support. And of that, half of it, $220,000, is pledged to pay back a loan the hospital took out 10 years ago. So $100 million operating budget, $220,000 of tax support. So
there's a gap there.
Yeah, right. And that $99,800,000 or whatever the number is gap, it has to be met by a business model that at the end of the month more dollars come in than go out. Otherwise, you start to shrink your services and are unable to provide services locally that our community would like us to provide, or what has happened in several other communities, you conclude that we don't have enough money to invest in new technology or new facilities or training our employees, so we have to look for a partner to merge with in order to continue to provide care in this community.
In order to get the quality that you want to get.
Because it comes with a cost. And the board has made it very clear to me, and I think that's based on the message from the community, that we want an independent hospital. And I think operating independence is closely related to financial independence. So when I talk about the need for financial performance, I mostly frame it in, this is the most important thing we can do to maintain our operating autonomy. And that is not have to rely on anyone else to fund our projects, to fund our services.
Wow. You're in a rock and a hard place there, I think. And right now, we both know on the political front, it's very unclear what's happening with the Trump administration and their medical plan. It's not clear to us just yet, but maybe we're running out of time, but maybe one last quick question. I know you're going to hate me for saying you can answer this quickly, but do you think this country will move in the direction of a single payer?
Well, the short answer is yes. The longer answer is when and how. You know, there's a great quote by Winston Churchill that you can always rely on the Americans to do the right thing only after they've exhausted every other option. And my thinking is that just in the 20 some odd years that I have been doing this, that the level of acceptance to the notion of some sort of single payer healthcare, or really universal access to care. The goal is every American has access to healthcare. And that is becoming something that more and more people are comfortable with, as it truly is a right that we should have. The mechanics of how we deliver on that will probably be subject to debate for years and years and years. But the short answer to your question is yes, and I will celebrate that day.
Yes, I'm with you. I believe universal access is crucial. Mike, believe it or not, we are out of time. Thank you so much for being a guest on Our Town. The subject of healthcare in the USA and the challenge ahead is an enormous topic. Thank you for helping us visualize, if not quite understand, some of the issues and problems ahead. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guest today has been Mike Glenn, the CEO of Jefferson Healthcare, a man with an immensely challenging job in face of the healthcare changes under the new administration. Thanks again, Mike.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it.
And I also want to thank the man in the control booth, John McPherson. Listeners can't see him or hear him, but he's the man who edits the show and helps make me and my guests sound coherent and intelligent. Well, coherent and not like sputtering idiots. I also want to thank our fearless program director, Larry Stein, and KPTZ's chairman, Robert Ambrose. So all of you out there in Radio Land, keep listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.